is a Bramble Jam podcast. Hi, I'm Bran, and I love Christmas documentaries.
I'm Alonzo, and I love testing the limits of what Bran thinks is a Christmas movie. And this
is the Deck the Hallmark podcast. Welcome to another Monday, another installment into the 25 weeks of Christmas movies. Before you know it, Alonzo, it's going to be all done. It's going to be all done, and we're just going to go back to our old, you know, just doing these silly, silly Netflix movies or whatever we're going to.
Well, you know, I'm like many Deck the Hallmark listeners, on the edge of my seat to see just exactly what y'all are planning to do for Christmas in July and how and when and all the things.
Well, aren't we all, Alonzo? I don't know when the Christmas in July schedule normally comes out, but that'll help us in our planning.
For sure.
But the good news is I shouldn't say good news, but we will be done with Signed, Sealed, Delivered when Christmas in July starts. So that frees up another day. And we'll be doing something on Mondays as we do, and so it's gonna be big fun. Is all I know, and it's gonna be festive. It's gonna be festive. Week 19 is where we are now. Week 19. Wow. You mailed me this one, and it was a documentary. This is a true story, Alonzo. I thought we had a DVD player in the office. And I went to go put it in there, and Dan has taken it to school because he teaches a film class. And so I went to my house, and I said, I have a DVD player. Can't find the power cord anywhere. So so your boy went over to Walmart and bought himself a $50 DVD player, and I watched the dang thing.
Physical media, woo!
In its own way, it's a Christmas scavenger hunt.
There you go.
I think that's just what you were wanting me to do. You just wanted to do a little May version of a Christmas scavenger hunt.
Yeah, I like to, I know how to keep it hopping.
Keep it hopping. This is a documentary, The Store, from the 80s. I want to know, are there any other Christmas adjacent or Christmas centered documentaries that you know of?
Yeah, there have been a few in recent years. I think like since I wrote Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, there have been quite a few that have popped up. There's I Am Santa Claus, which I thought maybe you had seen, about the people who devote themselves to being like major professional Santas.
Is that the one with Mick Foley, the professional?
Yes.
Wrestler?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I have seen that one.
Mick Foley, who is now super into being a Santa. There was a Netflix doc last year, I think, called Hot Chocolate Nutcracker. Which is about Debbie Allen's sort of annual production that she does in Los Angeles. That's a Nutcracker ballet, but infused with a lot of modern, contemporary sort of stylings and hip hop music and, you know, very kind of diverse casting. So that was kind of cool. Apple TV Plus has The Fight Before Christmas.
I did watch that.
About the guy who decorates his house like as though he were Danny DeVito in Deck the Halls. And you wind up rooting for the neighborhood association by the end of the film, or at least I did.
What you know, you would classify me, I'm sure, as a Southern evangelical. And I hated this guy. This is what I walked away thinking is like anybody who, when he introduces himself, he makes sure that you know he's a lawyer is someone I don't like.
Yeah, that's turned.
Hi, I'm Todd. I'm a lawyer. So
goodbye, Todd.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with lawyers. It's let it come out organically.
Don't open with that.
No, don't open with it.
Yeah,
it was
an argument, if you will.
But it's still like in court, I think, right? It ended with like him trying to appeal it. Is that right?
I suspect, that it might still be making its way through the courts. But that movie is it'll take you on a ride. I think there are more and more we're seeing Christmas documentaries. But this one, I think, was kind of an early player, and I don't even think I would say the director would probably argue that he was not thinking about it as a documentary about Christmas per se, But because it is a documentary about retail, it makes sense that he decided to set it, that he filmed it during the holiday season.
Do you know the director?
Not personally, but I'm a big fan of his work. He's probably one of the great living American documentary filmmakers. He got an honorary Academy Award a couple of years ago. You know, Frederick Wiseman's career launched in the 60s with a film called Titicut Follies, which went behind the scenes at an infamous sort of, you know, state-run mental institution that wound up, I think, like basically closing it down when people saw this movie and what was going on there. They tried to ban the film. It was a whole thing. And over the years, he has done really kind of fascinating looks at institutions, at artistic organizations, you know, from the Ballet Russe to the National Gallery to the Crazy Horse Burlesque nightclub in Paris, and he's done a lot of really great films about sort of like cities, like small towns, like how they're run and who lives there and, you know, who makes up.
Like, yeah, that Greenville.
Like, yeah, he should do a Yeah, That Greenville movie, because he did like, Belfast, Maine, and what's the Midwest one that he did a couple years ago, Dave?
In Jackson Heights, though.
Yeah, in Jackson Heights, but the New York City neighborhood. So yeah, he's one of my favorite filmmakers, and so I was thrilled to get to write about this in the book and to get to show it to you and to talk about it today.
My question for him would be, was it like, Christmas was the time that he wanted to do it because he thought it would make for the best, material, or did it just kind of stumble into it that way? Like, this is when you were available, blah, blah, blah.
Sure. I do not know the answer, but I think the results speak for themselves.
Well, let's talk about it. I would love for you to do a synopsis and then we'll break it down.
Sure. So The Store, was, premiered on December 14th, 1983. And it went a little something like this. The year is 1982, and the legendary Neiman Marcus department store in Dallas, Texas, is turning 75. So Frederick Wiseman, whose previous examinations of American institutions had included prisons, hospitals, and schools, turns his camera to the retail space. And when better to show the retail space than during the holiday season? So his camera takes us into the flagship Neiman Marcus for Thanksgiving and Christmas of 1982. We see behind the scenes meetings of executives. We see sales ladies training their hands and their faces to do to smile and to enter numbers onto the cash register. We see choral groups and brass ensembles play Christmas music. We see random customers launch into Christmas carols as they make their way through the store. We see people shop for fur. We see people smoke. It's 1982. We see the beauty salon and the photo studio and all the various facets, the behind the scenes, the offices, the loading docks, everything that makes Neiman Marcus Neiman Marcus. And there's a Christmas tree in every corner because it's Christmas 1982. And by the end of the film, we get a feel for how this space operates and also what retail and mercantilism and capitalism mean to American society as a whole. And I need you to wind me up here. And that, my friends, was The Store.
I think we did it pretty naturally.
Absolutely.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll break this movie down here on Deck the Hallmark. Yes, we are back and we are talking about The Store, the first and I'm assuming only documentary that we will be doing during the 25 weeks of Christmas movies. Let's talk about it. Alonzo.
Yeah. So this was, I think, my first Wiseman. But, you know, it definitely this is a documentary filmmaker that I kind of feel like you have to sort of let people know what they're in for when they see one of his movies, because, you know, we're used to the standard documentary format, which is like interviews with subjects talking to the camera and, you know, identifying who they are at the bottom of the screen and, you know, montages of different things and, you know, a score that has been put on it. And Wiseman doesn't do any of that stuff. Wiseman is all about fly on the wall. I mean, yes, he is, he is crafting the film through editing. And so it's not like he's trying to be impartial or whatever, but in no way does he ever let people address the camera. He does not add any music that isn't sort of organically occurring within the space of the film. And he is a big fan of process. He loves a meeting. Like any movie, he's like he had a film a couple years ago called City Hall that was all about the sort of inner workings of Boston's, you know, city government. And he loves to just sit in the corner and let meetings play out and have people kind of talk about what's important to them and what their goals are and how they want to achieve those goals. And we get those in this movie where they talk about like how this is a company that's devoted to salesmanship. And, you know, like we get to see job interviews, we get to see different sort of, you know, kind of corporate behind the scenes stuff that really sort of talk, they go into the explanation of what this company stands for and what kind of face they want to show to the world. So yeah, I think it's just a really fascinating documentary about if you're a fan of process and how things work and why things work the way they do. This movie really gives, I think, a full picture of this kind of legendary department store and how it all gets put together stem to stern. How was this for you?
Well, I want to know what do you think I thought of this? What does your gut say? Of everything you know about Brian, what do you think?
I have a hunch you fought it for a while. I have a hunch that you were sort of like crossing your arms and being like, I don't, what is this? But then like, I think as it went along, you kind of like adjusted your breathing and went with the pace of the film and how he's telling this stuff. And by the end of it, I'm sure you were riveted.
The opposite is true.
Oh, okay.
At first I was like, this is very cool. I like this. This is neat. The first opening meeting where the guy is comparing what they do to being doctors, was fascinating. The more I got into it, the more bored I became of just watching people do their jobs. And maybe that's a me thing. I can appreciate the way in which it was done. I think watching people with no narration for 2 hours was an uphill battle for Bran. I think after like the hour mark, I started to be like, okay, I get what we're doing here. You know what I mean? Like I enjoyed it for about an hour. And then the second hour felt like I was just standing still in time.
How would you feel if I told you that his last couple films, City Hall and Ex Libris, which is about the New York City Public Library, were both 3 hours long?
So here's the thing. I found the meetings to be interesting. So what was it?
Dave says Belfast Maine is 4 hours.
Oh, good. So I enjoyed the meeting. I actually think the City Hall one might be interesting because I do think that it was just like the, you know, guy with the coat and the woman with the big bird and like all that stuff. I was just like, all right, fine. Let's go back to a meeting. So I do feel like there would be cases where I would really enjoy it. If the meetings were up. Cause I did find those things to be interesting, but you know, there were things I was just like, how is this still happening? how is this bird still talking to this woman?
Yeah, the singing telegram guy.
Yes.
I'll tell you, part of what I find this movie appealing, and this is strictly, this is a very subjective me thing. I lived in Dallas for, you know, pretty much for most of the 90s. I moved there in 1989. This was shot in 82.
Okay.
This movie captures a certain something about the Dallas aesthetic and about like how rich people dress, how they want to present themselves to the world. Like there's a lot of Bill Blass in this movie. He was the hot thing at the time. This was the moment where everybody wanted to dress like Nancy Reagan. So there's a Bill Blass fashion show, and there's this row of women like in their fur coats and their, you know, the hair, the Dallas hair and everything, watching it. And I was just like, I don't know y'all, but I know y'all.
Yeah.
I worked with all of these women in some capacity or other, like when I was working at the film festival there or something like this. There's just so much Dallas coming to me off the screen here. You know,
I was blown away. I mean, you know, my I never heard of this department store, for one, but you know, I'm familiar with, you know, malls and whatnot. And sure. I always thought of like malls as being a place where you go and you like get a deal, you know, this, like I was blown away at the amount of money that like was being thrown around, like hundreds.
Well, this is a high end department store.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars on jewelry, yeah. Like just on a plate.
In 1982.
I know. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that someone would spend that amount of money on Christmas. Like it would, that part of it was like insane to me. Like these fur coats, like just crazy amount of money. And I guess I like, just like, I didn't see it coming. I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing about it, when I moved there in 89, they had just sort of popped the oil bubble. Uh-huh. And so like people who had like crazy amounts of money to spend were not in that position so much anymore. But in the 80s, this is when like the TV show Dallas was on. This is when like oil Dallas. Prices were sort of skyrocketing. So it was like, it was a very kind of, you know, like there was a lot of money there and a lot of if you've ever seen the movie Giant with Rock Hudson and Liz Taylor, like by the end of that movie, like when they all become rich with oil, like everybody is just suddenly, they're all wearing fur coats, even though it doesn't get that cold in Dallas really for much of it. But, you know, everybody's got a fur coat anyway. And so it is this, there's a level of ostentation going on there. And I love the interactions where, like, the women who were regular customers, how they would get kind of fawned over and complimented and sort of like sucked up to by the clerks and stuff.
There's one where one of the ladies is being fitted for a dress or something like that. And they like they tell her like how great she looks. And then she comes back with, but I want like this. And they just like switch immediately. Like, you're right. Actually, let's talk about,
sure. Put it on sideways. If that's how you want it. Great.
I think you're actually right about that. Yeah. I found the sales side of it interesting. Like it was like, I don't know. Like it was like, these are true salesmen and saleswomen. Yeah. Like selling stuff. Like it was just interesting to just like, I think in my mind I was thinking mall. And so it was like, these are people that have a list of regulars that they're calling and trying to get them to come in for their, it's like that side of it was very interesting.
Yeah. Neiman Marcus has always been like the poshest, the most expensive, the most, you know, la-di-da. And that's been their selling point. Like, you know, I think there's even a meeting where they talk about, like, we're not here to offer people, you know, sales. Right. That it's not, you know, well, we will mark stuff down, but we're not here to have people to come shop for discounts. We're here for this total experience of the whole, of what Neiman Marcus is about, you know. And so that in itself, I think, is kind of dates the film in the way that the furs and the cigarettes do, you know, because so many of those high end departments are Barney's no longer exists. I mean, Neiman's really isn't, you know, I think they've filed for Chapter 11 once or twice, you know, so it's these are kind of harder things to pull up. Although, like, for example, there's a mall here in, you know, south of me in, like, you know, the Long Beach area called South Coast Plaza. And one mall, it's two malls connected by like a walking bridge. Mm-hmm. And one of them is super high end. Like they've got an Hermes store and they've got a Pucci store and a Gucci store and like all these like high end designers. And then you walk that bridge to the other side. It's like, oh, that's where the sporting goods store and the Hallmark shop and the, you know, the other stuff is. So they somehow managed to like juggle both of those things.
One thing I didn't expect, I think, and maybe it's just my naivete on like what it was like in the 80s, but like in the executive room, I was surprised to see like that there were women like talking, and there was a woman of color in the room as well. And I expected it to be very, I think just thinking of the early 80s, I was like, this is going to be very like the guys club type of thing. And I was interested to see some of that in these meetings.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall in corporate structures, that was probably harder to come upon in the early 80s. But when you're talking about a department store, it's unlikely that there's going to be, like, say, a guy in charge of the lingerie department. Like, that they're going to hire a woman who's worked her way up, you know, to do that. So it was probably a little more egalitarian in that respect in terms of department heads than, say, if this movie were taking place at a stock brokerage or something.
Yeah. I found I found bits and pieces of it to be very interesting. I think the whole lost me a little bit, but they were I can appreciate it, and I can also see, like, say that there were parts of it that I found to be very interesting, but not as much interesting to me.
Well, I'm glad you gave it a shot, and now that you know what he's about, if you see City Hall or Ex Libris or, you know, one of his other films, then you'll go in knowing exactly what you're going to get.
Well, and listen, I have a DVD player now, so the opportunity,
the sky's the limit.
Opportunities are endless. But you can also, the link will be in the description, but you can also watch it on Canopy if you're library.
Yes.
Library is what I said. Library allows that. All right, let's talk about feels, Christmas feels. What do you got?
You know, I think that I'm given how much of the, I was going to say American, but really Western Christmas celebration centers on, you know, shopping and gift purchasing and that whole sort of, like I said, the mercantile aspect of it. I'm surprised that more movies aren't kind of set there. I think that, like, you know, between the occasional musical interludes of, you know, these choirs and bands and whatnot that show up to play in the store,
or a random guy that I think,
just he's a chauffeur.
I don't think he was invited. I think he was.
He just took it upon himself.
Everybody's looking around like, you seen this guy?
Is he official? But he's carrying bags, so, you know, it's not like he just wandered.
Listen, the Christmas spirit is, it can sweep you away.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think because of that, I would give this like a 7.5 on the Christmas scale. And there's a lot of, you know, trees in the corner of all the different sort of, you know, retail areas.
I'm a little bit lower. I'm probably right out of 5. I appreciate what he did. Like, it what it is what it is. I'm not going to add anything. I'm not going to take anything away. If this did have a Christmas score underneath it throughout the whole movie, forget about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was that would have really added a little extra punch for me, but it's a 5, and it does not, but in the world of every shopping trip I take being online, it was fun to see it in action.
Yeah, that's the other weird kind of nostalgia element of this film, is that, like, people don't shop the way they used to, like, in terms of physically having to go to a place. Like, did you see that Abercrombie & Fitch documentary that's on Netflix right now?
I've seen a clip or two, but I haven't watched the whole thing yet.
At the beginning of the film, this guy talks about, like, imagine a search engine that you could walk through. Like, he's having to explain what a mall is to people who have no clue, because, like, there's an entire generation now that just, like, beep, boop, boop, and that's their shopping, you know. That aspect of it, I think, really kind of adds to the appeal as well, though, that it's like, oh, yeah, we just have to go to the
place. What's interesting is I was talking to somebody who has a shop in a mall recently over the holiday season. They said it was the best year that they had in years. And I wonder if the one thing to come out of COVID is people wanting to actually go shopping again. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. I think there's that hunger for just a level of interactivity. And now that everything else in our lives for 2 years was conducted on our laptops, including conversations like this, the opportunity to be like, what? I can actually get in my car, go to a place and touch things and maybe try on a shirt. Yes. Count me in, you know.
But that leads me to announce the Deck the Hallmark Mall. It's coming across the country, multiple malls. It's the future. Hallmark. Yeah, the malls are our future, is what I'm trying to get at.
Just like cable television.
That's right. Let's do recommendations. What would you say if maybe someone like this, what would be something they could carry on with?
You know, I have a couple in mind that aren't Christmas movies, but that are both shot in Dallas and both, you know, mall culture, I think, plays a key role in both of them. One is a movie that David Byrne directed in the 80s called True Stories, which has a lot of memorable Talking Head songs in it, also like an early John Goodman appearance. And it's about a fictional town in Texas and their sort of, you know, big annual, the big celebration they're putting on for the state sesquicentennial. And there's a whole segment shot at North Park Mall in Dallas. There's also a big segment shot at North Park Mall in Dallas in one of Robert Altman's last films called Dr. T and the Women, which, you know, kind of posits the mall as a sort of central, you know, gathering space and social outlet. If I wanted to do a Christmas movie, I would probably go with Hallmark's Christmas at Cartwright's.
Yeah.
Which is the one where Alicia Witt has to like go and drag to become the store Santa Claus.
That's a classic. That's a classic. Yeah. I would say I would recommend that you go to a mall. And walk just walk around and see what type of trouble you can get in, and then go watch Christmas Tree Lane, another Alicia Witt movie. Make a day of it. Make a day of it. Of Alicia Witt, you know, losing her store. It'll be big fun for everybody.
Yes, wear a mask at the mall, though.
Oh yeah. All right, I am ready for my recommendation, or I'm ready to tell the people what we're gonna watch.
Okay, I will.
We're gonna do something I've never done before, which is make Alonzo watch a Disney Channel original movie, which was my gateway drug to Hallmark. This is a movie that I grew up with and I haven't seen in years, so I have no idea how it holds up. We're gonna watch The Ultimate Christmas Present. It's on Disney Plus. Give it a watch. Woo!
Alrighty then.
Yo, we are doing something fun.
Okay.
Can't wait for it. Until next time, may we be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Deck the Hallmark is a Bramble Jam podcast recorded live in, yeah, that Greenville, South Carolina. Is produced by Brandon Gray. Set decor by Plum Haywood Mall. For more information on all Bramble Jam podcasts, you can go to BrambleJamPodcast.com. For more information on how to listen to Deck the Hallmark ad-free, you can go to BrambleJamPlus.com.
You're about to hear some ads that help keep the lights on here at the studio. Feel free to listen. Feel free to turn it off. Whatever you want to. But either way, thanks so much for your support.